Up next, dissociative identity disorder. Back in the old days, it used to be called multiple personality disorder, and if you know that name, you probably remember seeing Sally Field play Sybil in the movie. Sybil was reportedly based on a true story about a woman that had suffered horrible abuse, and to cope with that, she formed different personalities and as many as 16 different personalities, the story goes. Now joining Sybil is a new TV drama, The United States of Tara, and in it, actress Toni Collette plays a woman with four distinctive personalities, including a teenager and a man. And the show has rekindled awareness and criticism of the multiple personality diagnosis, with therapists who are divided, really, on whether it is possible to have separate personalities in the same person. And that's what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the hour. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. And joining me now to talk more about it are my guests. Kathy Steele is a psychotherapist and a clinical nurse specialist. She is president of the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation and clinical director of Metropolitan Counseling Services. She joins us from Atlanta at WABE. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ira. It's good to be here.
You're welcome. Also with us is Newman Garibe. Dr. Garibe is a staff psychiatrist at the Danbury Hospital in Danbury, Connecticut. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Let me ask this question first, Kathy. Tell us what exactly dissociative identity disorder is.
Well, in spite of some of the things that have been portrayed in the media, it's actually clinically a quite different process for the most part. And what we're actually looking at are different senses of selves across time and context, such that a person experiences themselves as completely different. Mm-hmm. Now, any one of us can do that. But the difference in dissociative identity disorder is that there appears to be a sense of ownership and agency to that different self that experiences itself from the perspective of not me. So you have a self that's me, and you have a self that's not me.
Do you get like we see in Sybil or on the new show? Do you have actually people changing? I want to speak to so and so now, or so and so comes out as a different personality.
Well, that can happen, but it so rarely looks like what's on TV. Of course, that's greatly exaggerated, and less than 3-5% of people with DID actually have that kind of presentation. It's mm-hmm. generally much more subtle than that.
So how do you diagnose that a person has DID?
Well, there are several instruments that we have now. The Structured Clinical Interview for Dissociative Disorders, the Multidimensional Inventory for Dissociation, and the Dissociative Disorders Interview Scale. All three of those are very reliable and valid instruments that distinguish dissociative mm-hmm. identity disorder from other disorders.
Mm-hmm. Would people walk into your office, you know, and ask their doctor, like the commercials say, and say, hey, I think I have other personalities? Is that how they enter into this?
Occasionally that happens. Most people come in with a sense of losing time and self-puzzlement about who they are and not being clear about what's happening in their lives in the present. And those are clues, that time loss and sense of this lack of realization of self is an indication that people may be dissociative.
So they might say to you, you know, I woke up in a strange hotel room and I don't know how I got there, things like that?
Yes. Yes, or I go to work and I can't remember what I do at work, although I know I do a pretty good job. I have no recollection of it.
Huh. Do most therapists believe that this is a real disorder?
Well, I think that there are a number of surveys that have shown that many do and a few don't. And I think the question is less about belief now than mm-hmm. what is the science behind it.
Mm-hmm. Newman Garibe, doctor, do you believe this is a real disorder?
No, I don't.
Why?
Well, the reason behind that is that a lot of the symptoms that that patients present with can be explained with other diagnostic categories that are already present in the diagnostic and statistical manual. So I think the diagnostic label is kind of superfluous and can be explained with the other disorders that are less controversial. in addition to that, I agree with your guest on the show that I think Sybil has done some disservice in terms of creating a Sybil paradigm, which is rather the very rare exception rather than the rule. And that has, in my opinion, has clouded the public's mind about what this disorder is all about and how these symptoms can be explained.
What other things might explain them? What other kinds of diagnoses might explain them?
Well, I mean, several diagnoses. One of them, for example, is borderline personality disorder, and part of the symptoms of borderline personality disorder include identity disturbance. So that's as far as the identity part. As far as the dissociative part, it is one of its diagnostic criteria that some of the patients with borderline can have severe dissociative symptoms. So we have already a diagnostic category, not the only category, but a category that can explain a significant number of these cases. Other diagnostic categories would include post-traumatic stress disorder as well, which also includes significant dissociative symptoms. Mm. Of course, other rule-outs would be the effects of substances or withdrawal from substances. Very minority of cases might be understood in the realm of fictitious disorder, for example, or rapid cycling bipolar. But I would say that the two categories that stand out as possible explanation would be the borderline personality as well as post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm. Have you had actually cases of your own that could have been diagnosed that way, but you could explain them in some other way?
Well, I've had so far 15 cases of alleged dissociative identity disorder or multiple personality disorder between my experience at the Institute of Living as well as in Danbury. Mm-hmm. And in every single one of these cases, I felt that the presentation can be explained using a different construct other than dissociative identity disorder as portrayed in the media.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Steele, what's your reaction?
Well, again, we're trying not to use the media portrayal as the paradigm for dissociative disorders. I think that's not accurate. And I do think that there have been numerous studies that have been able to make a distinction between borderline personality disorder, PTSD, bipolar, and dissociative identity disorder. There are very unique characteristics to this disorder, and mm-hmm. that is a sense of self that has its own first-person perspective, and that does not occur in any other disorder. Now, in a lot of these studies, dissociative disorders have never been ruled out. So there have been some very recent studies in borderline personality disorder segments that show that a significant subset of those individuals also have a dissociative disorder.
Just what is a dissociative disorder? You could define that.
Dissociative disorder is defined in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders as a lack of integration between consciousness, perception, the normal integrated functionings of memory, consciousness, and perception. And, of course, that's an extremely vague definition. So I think what we're looking at, again, with most of the dissociative disorders is a distinct, at least one other aspect of self that experiences itself as separate and distinct from the other self.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the dissociative disorder this hour on Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Kathy Steele at the moment. And you mentioned the DSM-4. Newman, you believe that that in the next edition of the DSM-5, when it comes out, you're working and you're arguing to get rid of that whole definition from it.
Yes, I'm hoping to. I don't think the political will is there yet, but that's part of my argument, is that I think although I've been accused that actually doing a disservice to patients and clinicians, I truly believe that it's going to be doing service to patients and their families.
Mm-hmm. In an article, you cite statistics that say that only 21% of 300 board-certified American psychiatrists believe there is strong evidence for this DID, scientific validity.
Yes, that's correct. That's out of the biological psychiatry laboratory in McLean Hospital in Massachusetts.
Well, why is there this disconnect? This is a confusing one. I read about it. How do you square that with Kathy Steele saying that most therapists believe DID is a real phenomenon, but when you get into the psychiatric field, as you say, they don't believe it?
Well, I think actually Kathy was pretty careful about not using the word most, and I don't think it is most. I mean, there are so far at least the two studies, one for the American Board American psychiatrists and the other Canadian psychiatrists, mm-hmm. and both of them, fewer than one third of them, stated that they believe that it should be included in the DSM without reservations. So mm-hmm. that's less than one third. The American psychiatrists felt that one quarter of them, that there was strong scientific evidence to support this diagnosis, whereas in Canada it's only one out of seven who felt that there is strong evidence for it. Mm-hmm. And in Canada the opinion was equal between the French-speaking and the English-speaking Canadian psychiatrists. So I don't think that it's more, at least as far as psychiatrists are concerned, I think it's the minority who believe that there is it should be included without reservations, or that there is mm-hmm. strong evidence for it.
Kathy, would you agree with that?
No, I don't. I think that study, number one, was done in 1999, which is 10 years ago, and that's a lifetime in a newly evolving field. And I think that there's a little bit of confusion. Yes, one-third, approximately one-third, said that it should not be included and had no reservations about it, but the vast majority said they would include it with reservations. And the other thing is that people said 21% said there was no scientific evidence. Well, that was back in 1999, and I would say between 1999 and 2009, we've amassed a huge amount of data from neuroscience that says that there are particular ways that the brain functions, or actually malfunctions, in dissociation that are very unique.
Mm-hmm. So you think that if you did the study again, the numbers would change?
I think it would. Mm-hmm. But again, that's what I think. I don't think we actually know, and I think it's most helpful to really look at what does the science say at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk lots more about dissociative identity disorder. Lots of people on the phones want to take a part in this. Kathy Steele is a psychotherapist and clinical nurse specialist, president of the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation, and clinical director of Metropolitan Counseling Services. Newman Garibe is a staff psychiatrist at Danbury Hospital in Danbury, Connecticut. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. We're also tweeting at SciFry, at SCIFRI, and in Second Life you can find Science Friday Island. We'll be taking your calls, your tweets, and your input, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about dissociative identity disorder with my guest, Kathy Steele. She's a psychotherapist and clinical nurse specialist. And Newman Garibe is staff psychiatrist at Danbury Hospital in Danbury, Connecticut. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Columbus. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for taking my
it's
call.
It's Ira today. Go ahead.
Oh, goodness. Where to start? Thank you. I think that, you know, I guess I want to introduce this by saying that I'm both a practicing psychotherapist and someone who has been living with the experience of DID for quite some time.
Do you have a question?
Really,
Sarah, do you have a question?
I have a question.
All right, get right to your question.
So the point I'd like to make is that I know that there's a lot of resistance in the psychiatric and psychoanalytic communities to recognizing DID. And I suspect, and I would love to hear Kathy talk about this if she can, that a lot of the resistance comes from a unwillingness to recognize the amount of trauma that children in our culture are put through.
All right, let me put that to her.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Kathy Steele?
Yes. Thank you, Sarah. I actually might disagree with that a little bit. I think that more and more people are very willing to acknowledge trauma. I think what it is, some of the sticking points are, can a self be divided? Can a personality be separate? And it's more a conceptual idea at the moment than it is a denial of trauma.
So that you can find that people with DIV don't have trauma in their background.
Yes, in some cases. It's rare, but actually there have been some cases.
You mentioned before the break that there was new research in since 1999, the new scientific evidence. Can you cite what that is?
Yes. There are hundreds of articles on dissociation as it relates to post-traumatic stress disorder. It's very common. And it's a central tenet in post-traumatic stress disorder. And how we really view dissociative identity disorder is sort of an extreme post-traumatic stress developmental syndrome that over time a person will not develop a coherent personality. Mm-hmm. So there are those studies, and then from those arose studies in the neurobiology of dissociation, which is very distinct. And there are at least four studies that I'm aware of, three fMRI studies and one PET scan study, that actually show in dissociative identity disorder that there are distinctive patterns of brain activity between one self and another self, or one personality and another.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Garibay, how would you answer that?
Well, I would like to thank Kathy for, rising up to the issue of not confusing the debate about dissociative identity disorder with the debate about trauma and abuse, because I think that argument was used in the past to silence any dissenters that we are resistant or unwilling to recognize that there is a lot of trauma in American society, or that there is a lot of child abuse or sexual abuse or incest. That's a totally different debate, different than dissociative identity disorder itself. So I thank Kathy for making that distinction and not falling to that bait. The other thing about dissociation, I agree that there has been recent studies about dissociation, and again, to differentiate that from dissociative identity disorder, because if we look at dissociation in general, I mean, this is, in my opinion, an experience that should be normalized, because it happens almost to all of us. I mean, we're pretty familiar with the highway dissociation that happens to almost all of us, driving on the highway and listening to NPR or some other nice show, and you miss your exits or two exits down the road because you are dissociated in a different space-time atmosphere, or your mind is wandering. So, I have no qualms with the dissociation itself. And again, I would like to, focus the debate on the dissociative identity disorder, especially as it is perceived in the public's minds through, unfortunately, Sybil and the United States of Tara. Mm-hmm.
So you think that this is a sort of a self-perpetuating thing, then, once this becomes part of the debate or comes into the public fore again, as it is by these TV shows, you're going to see people showing up thinking they have these.
So yes, and this phenomenon has observed in many other things, I mean, including stuff about alien abductions and other fads in the media.
You're saying this is that's calling this a fad?
I believe so, in the way it's conceptualized in the Hollywood stuff. And there has been, speaking of recent studies, there has been a book out by Mikhail Borch Jacobson about making Minds and Madness, targeting Sybil specifically, and how it was spiced up and fabricated, and how there was more fiction than reality in it, which was a great disservice, I think, to the public.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, how do you react to Dr. Garibay calling it a fad?
Well, I understand what he's saying, and I would like to continue to make a distinction between these public, fictionalized to some degree, accounts of DID and what we see in clinical practice, what people actually experience subjectively, and what the science says. I mean, there isn't a way to for a fad to show up, I think, on a functional MRI or on a PET scan. And so I think we're drilling down to some real questions about how is self formed, and what is it that's happening in the brain when people say that they switch from one part to another. Something is clearly happening that cannot be reproduced by controls.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let me go to the phones, but before I do that, let me bring in a tweet that came from EBZ, who says, why argue about the diagnosis? What about the impact on treatment? Are we splitting hairs here? I mean, is the problem here really maybe just a difference in language, Kathy, or meaning? Maybe we need a better definition, or it sounds like you two really are disagreeing about that there is a real difference in what you're talking about.
Yes, I think we probably are disagreeing on at least some points, and that in my mind, that point may be itself a unitary construct, and I don't think that it is, and other people believe that it is. But I do think neuroscience is drilling down to the fact that self is not continuous.
That's an interesting topic.
Yes, very interesting.
I would like to thank the person who tweeted that, because at the end of the day, I agree with him in terms of what we're trying to do is relieve people's distress.
Yes.
As opposed to being a partisan of, a great proponent or enthusiast for this diagnostic label or that. Mm-hmm. Because in other diagnoses as well, we focus more on the symptoms as opposed to what we call it, what label we choose for it.
Mm. It was a she, by the way, but
okay.
I know. Let me ask you this, Dr. Grabe. Do scientists know enough about consciousness? You know, we hardly know anything about consciousness to totally separate states of consciousness to know how they might possibly exist one next to another.
Well, I mean, that's an excellent question, because as long as we're talking about these slippery terms that are moving targets, that's hard to pin down. I don't think there will always be some debate and argument. Mm. And again, the unity of the consciousness or the unity of the self. Some people believe in it, myself included. Some other people believe that there can be multi-consciousness existing in the same mind. Mm. There has been, however, philosophical discussions as well as linguistic discussions about these terms. And one of the philosophical discussions is why make this experience a pathology instead of calling it part of the human experience, such as, for example, a Nobel laureate by the name Amartya Sen, who believes in the multiplicity and the identity without having it to be a pathological state.
Yeah, let's go to the phones. David in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, David.
Hey, interesting subject. As a layman, my question is, how does Europe and other civilized societies treat this with their professionals? And what is the basis and the consequences of your discussion? I can see part of the consequences would be the legal system. It would be easier to defend someone if you came across as different personalities, and therefore who has the consequences in there. What else? Is it who treats it? Is it the medicine? What at the base of this, why the dispute?
Good question. You know, you might look at, let's say, a car accident and say, you know, that was the person who was driving that. I don't recognize that person who was on dope, was smoking dope or had alcohol and something and killed a lot of people on a highway. That's not somebody I recognize. Kathy, might you not argue that that person was going through a different personality at the time?
Well, certainly a different self state.
Yeah.
But
legally, this gentleman is asking, might not that be a defense? Because I was not myself at that moment.
Well, it has been put up for a defense on occasion, and it's been a rather abysmal failure, because I don't think you can take a different sense of self so far as to say the individual has zero responsibility for what they do. And it's a really complicated issue, but that legal defense is rarely very successful.
Talking about this associative disorder this hour on Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Grabe, you want to weigh in on any of that? Should we just move on from
No, I think there has been a primal fear, was it, with Ed Norton, you know, trying to play that defense. So it does have some minor legal consequences, but I think the bigger consequence might have to do with whether insurance is going to cover it or not if we remove it from DSM. Who's going to pay for treatment if we remove it from DSM, and so on.
Interesting.
So,
the other part of that question was, how do other countries handle this diagnosis?
Well, maybe Kathy can speak better to that. However, as far as I'm aware of, it caught on in the Netherlands, but the rest of Europe is as skeptical as the Canadians, if not even more skeptical about this diagnosis. The incidence rates, that were the ones that I looked at least, are much less so than in Northern America.
Kathy Steele?
Well, I would disagree with that a bit. There have been well over 30 studies in all kind of different countries, not only Europe, but China, Japan, Taiwan, some of the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Finland, and also Turkey, Israel, and Oman. And even though some of the rates have fluctuated a little bit, the mean average of the prevalence rate, including in normal populations that have never been exposed to any media, is about 1.1%. Mm-hmm. And that does fluctuate a bit between countries, but it does exist. And there are many countries now that are beginning to acknowledge that and work with it, not only the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the dissociative disorder this hour on Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Kathy Steele. I want to thank my guests because we have run out of time. This is a very interesting topic, and we will pick it up as we go on in the course of covering other issues, this one also. Kathy Steele is a psychotherapist and clinical nurse specialist, president of the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation, and clinical director of the Metropolitan Counseling Services. She joined us from Atlanta. And Newman Garabe is a staff psychiatrist at Danbury Hospital in Danbury, Connecticut. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.